Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We got the new swag rolling here. Big shout out to Keith Miller at a Strategic Factory for putting together the sewing and the stitching and the crabs and all the intelligent conversation. But it's powered up by our friends at Taharka. Now, you know, I give you the caramel apple crisp, but it's all gone. I ate it. Listen, you know, these aren't props around here on the desk. I actually eat the Taharka brothers, and we actually get it in the eight packs, just like this. They will deliver it to you in time for the holidays, the eggnog, the peppermint bark, even the sweet potato crumble. Don Mueller's still looking around for that. $15.70 off. Enter it, the coupon code, right as you check out. $40.30. Eight of these come to your door next week. Don is getting skinny for the holidays, right?
You don't get skinny off of Taharka, but you do get holiday happy.
Look at this, man. This is a sweet potato crumble here, and you can see just a little bit of the residue that got out on the outside of that. Make sure you're ordering that. Our friends at State Fair and El Guapo are curbsiding, and our dear friends down at Fadley's are shipping those crab cakes. Davey was supposed to come on the program this week, and she made a date with me. Then it snowed. She's like, I've been shipping crab cakes for 13 hours, and I'm thinking, that's good. That means people are shopping local. They know local crab cakes are the best. Get them from Fadley's and get them delivered. And our friends at Moeller & Gary Realty, selling homes, buying homes, doing all that great stuff. We have so many new sponsors coming on. We're going to be telling you about them. Don, we're trying to get around the city here, and we're talking about doing local things, and this was your idea. Once Brandon came in and Stuart came in, and we're starting to shut down bars and restaurants from dining in, we all realized that being local and shopping local, especially the next 10 days, very, very important.
Well, anyone who knows me, Nestor, who has heard me go on and on and on, know that one of my passions is that we need to find, identify, and encourage the next generation of leaders in our city, in our state, in the entire region. And we have really one of the up-and-coming next generation leaders in Baltimore City with us today, Second District Councilwoman Danielle McCray. Danielle, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you. I am so happy to be here.
I got to talk Room Raider with you first. This is a real leg lamp. This is not the green screen. These are real ice cream. You know, so we room rate with everyone. I mean, you got like some purple going there. Is it always purple or just when Lamar wins like he does on Monday night?
It's actually a little pink, but you can't see it right now.
I see purple. I see shades of violet in there. Deep, rich, Victorian purple.
Danielle, your story is one that's really inspirational. And I say that as not only, you know, a former county executive and government employee, but as a former educator. It just warms my heart when I hear folks like you talk about how you got involved at an early age, and I think it had to do with mom and a community association. So can you sort of give us a sense of where this commitment to public service came from in the McCray household?
You know what? It actually started with my great-grandmother. She's gone now, but she used to live at 1612 North Gilmore. And it started with just that hard work ethic, taking care of your community. And I think it was 5 when she taught me how to scrub her marble steps. So
big importance. I'm from the East Side. Marble steps, man. That's the Christmas tree all year round, right? Literally.
Yeah. And that was my first introduction to taking care of our community, of what's around me. And of course, like you said, my mom had me at a very young age. She was very involved in our local community association. So we were literally, as a family, just door knocking and passing out literature to get people to come to our meetings. At one point, to save one of our recreation centers, it was a very humbling experience. It's something that I was glad that she pulled us into, but that is how I started.
Now, that's everybody where 1612 North Gilmore is, by Penn North, correct?
It is. It's very close.
Well, let's take it. Describe your district for the folks who are listening, Danielle. They hear Second District. We always say we assume that folks know what that means. Talk about what your district encompasses.
So it is northeast, parts of northeast Baltimore, mainly the parts that border the county. So I want to say communities such as Frankfort, which is one of the largest communities in the city, portions of Overly that I share with Baltimore County, the Sedonia area. It even goes down to Pulaski Industrial Area, and I have a very small piece of southeast Baltimore in the Highlandtown area that I share with District 1, which would be Councilman Cohen.
That's my turf. That's East Side. I like that. You know, for you in representing the people during the middle of this pandemic, run me through the last 7 or 8 months, because I think that's the first question. Nobody gets into elected official or in any public service thinking, oh, we're going to have a plague come in here and we're going to have to speak to all sorts of health issues and then the financial fallout that's happened to so many people here locally.
It has been a total pivot for my offices, for my communities, for the youth, and that's just across the city. So for me, meetings may be for my constituents who don't have access to Zoom. They're going to be socially distanced porch meetings. We're doing a few less of them because it's getting a little cold outside. But making sure that when someone's calling in, it could be as simple as an unemployment claim, even though we don't handle it at the local level, making sure that we're connecting our residents where they need to be, offering support, stepping in even as a council member to help a kid through the phone access school for the, you know, school, virtual school for the first time at the beginning of the year. It's literally all hands on deck. Supporting our local businesses, all of our local businesses, especially at this time. 1 in 4 small businesses have closed due to the pandemic nationally. And just being there, we started a shop local challenge with other members. I've started a shop local challenge with other members within the city council, Council Member Cohen in District 1 and Council Member Odette Ramos as well. And what we're just asking is everyone, just like you have the Taharka ice cream that I love, we're just asking that for any of your businesses, just take a photo and hashtag shop local challenge and put it on all of social media with it, just to support and just show your local businesses, just to support your local businesses. But it's been a huge pivot. We're all in this together, and I'm a half full, the glass is always half full type of person. So I do feel like our city will just come out stronger from this pandemic, but it's all hands on deck.
When you talk to businesses and you said nationally 1 out of 4, how's the second doing? I mean, I live downtown and Eric Costello's my guy here. And, you know, we're at the harbor and the east side of the harbor and finding restaurants that were open that aren't anymore, that the landscape, at least where I live, it's going to be different when this is over with. I mean, we still have prime real estate down here, and there may be some people coming back to, you know, fix Harbor Place and do those kind of things long term. But I'm talking about over the next year or two, just businesses holding on here and holding on curbside during the winter. I think it's a lot different, especially where I am, where there was no parking, there was no curbside. But maybe outside a little bit more, restaurants and different bars and different places that can't be open have adapted over the last 7 or 8 months, or at least tried to.
We are doing our best in the second district. Obviously, I have a ton of diverse businesses, just like any district across the city. We have a ton of breweries in southeast Baltimore. I have bakeries. I have new restaurants that actually open, I want to say, a month before.
By the way, you have all the good bakeries. When a good peach cake comes in
the
summer.
Philly Bakery.
Ooh, man. Hey, Don, I'm telling you, man, when I need peach cake in the summer, I spend a lot of time in a second. I'm up there early in the morning. I'll sneak up there. Seriously. All the time.
You can come back. Woodley Bakery is open right now. So don't just come in the summertime. But we've had some businesses that open. When I think about Bertha's, Bertha's Soul Food Restaurant right on Bel Air Road in Parkside, right at the bottom of my district on the Bel Air Road side. They opened, I want to say, maybe about 1 or 2 months before the pandemic started. And it has been a total pivot for them. Opening up all mobile apps. They even open up a juice bar in another portion, but trying to figure out how to be creative for our businesses. When I think about Old Line in that Highlandtown Crescent area, they pivoted, even with the outdoor dining, making sure that they're doing drinks to go, packaging other items. We're doing the best that we can in the second district. And what I will say is that our residents, we are supporting our businesses strong.
Well, Danielle, you were in addition to supporting your businesses, you also have been focused on homeowners, and you were particularly focused on tax sale legislation that would help protect folks, I guess, from having their home taken in a tax sale. Educate our listeners as to what that means to have your home taken in a tax sale and what your legislation will do to help those folks.
Of course. So the tax sale, it means that anytime that you have any type of bill, and sometimes people may just think property taxes, but you could have a, say your sidewalk was repaired, or you have some bills that maybe your grass wasn't cut a few times. If your bills get to a certain amount, $750 for homeowner occupied properties, whether it's property taxes, any combination, your home can be placed up for tax sale if you're not able to pay the amount. And with tax sale, it means that there's a lien placed against your house. You will have to pay a penalty fee. Someone can purchase the lien, and then you'll also have to pay to get it back. You may have to pay their additional attorney fees and items like that. So what I was able to do through enabling legislation from the state, and it was Delegate Ann Kaiser who enabled it, what we were able to do is that I was able to put through a piece of legislation to exempt our most vulnerable residents and our legacy homeowners, most importantly, because I feel if you've been vested in Baltimore City and you've stayed here with us through the worst times, through the best times, and you're still here, then we should do our best to find some vehicle to protect you at all odds. But it's for residents who are over 65 years old, people with disabilities, low-income residents who just need some support. And need an additional vehicle. So we came up with a process to exempt those residents from tax sale. The bill was actually signed the day before the election. I want to say November the 2nd. It's my first bill. I'm very proud of it. When I came into the city council, I wanted to make sure that I was putting forth meaningful legislation, legislation that could help not just the residents of the 2nd District, but residents across Baltimore City. And I'm very proud of the bill. And I'm very proud that our previous mayor, Mayor Young, supported it from day one. Mayor Scott supported it as council president, and it passed through with the help of my colleagues 14-1. But it's a bill to exempt our most vulnerable residents, and again, our legacy residents from tax sale.
Well, you mentioned Mayor Scott. You have been friends with the current mayor for a long time. You worked closely with him when he was the councilman in that area. So now he's the mayor. He's got the big seat. He's got the big office. And his buddy, Councilwoman Danielle McCray, walks in and says, "Come on, Mayor, we can do this." What's the this? What do you, working with the mayor, what's at the top of your to-do list?
It's city services. It's making sure right today, it's making sure the city services works for all residents across the board. Last week I was named the chair of the health, environment, and technology committee. So what's most important to me is health initiatives, environmental protection within the city, digital divide issues, and challenging those. Those are agenda items for me. But what we want is the same thing that everyone wants. What I want in those discussions with the mayor is the same thing. It's quality of life issues. It's making sure that our kids are going to strong schools. They're getting an education like I received from Baltimore Public City Schools, where I can come out and be a successful adult. It's making sure that the community resources that we have, that they're coming together just to build stronger communities, whether it's rec centers, whether it's churches, that we have the support that we need within the city. So people don't have to leave. And there's a sense of community across all neighborhoods. That's what's important to me. And those are the conversations that we have. How can we make this how can we make this move for the city?
Well, as a resident who's paid taxes here for 17 years and hasn't left, and I live at the harbor and I care a lot. I care so much that I turn my sports station into a Let's Fix the City station to have conversations like this with people like you that are lifting up, and your brother and everyone else here trying to make the city better. Make a case for Brandon, because not everybody voted for Brandon. It was obviously very split back in the spring. And then out in the county, people are saying, who is he? What's he about? You were considered to be in his inner circle. Make the case for Brandon fixing this, and making the case for Brandon being a two-term mayor. And 10 years from now, we wake up with a new Inner Harbor, a new value to my condo and everything I've invested in. But Brandon being a different kind of leader, as he has told us and in front of everyone else, what's going to be Brandon's pathway here the next 3 or 4 years?
I think he would be able to say it best, but Mayor Brandon Scott, he is a transformational leader. A lot of the items that we're talking about now, they're items that he was speaking about 10 years ago. And now he has the opportunity to foresee this and get it done for the city. I support him 100%. And I hope that anyone who's listening, we're going to give our mayor a chance to get this right. I believe that he's on the right path.
What should people know about him that they don't know about him?
What should people know about Brandon that they don't know about? I feel
Danielle. Be careful.
Like no. Just come Brandon. On. Don't PR her. Get out of the car. Get out of here.
I'm going to say what's
trying to learn about the mayor.
I'm going to say what's most important. Our mayor loves our city. He loves our city with all of his heart. He is Baltimore born and bred. And I think that's the most important thing that everyone needs to know. Any decision that he makes, he's not making those decisions lightly, because it's from a place of, this is our home. That's what I feel people should know. He loves our city.
Well, Danielle, that came across. We've probably had the mayor on four times, I'm guessing, at least three, maybe four times. And you can't sit with the mayor for a couple of minutes and not sense his love of this city.
Even though he's not a poly guy.
Even
though he's not a poly guy.
We won't mention his stuff.
And he talks about that bus ride, every day to go to Mervo and back, and his whole experience. But one of the things that's always struck me about Brandon, and again, you're of that generation, was the absolute pain and anguish that the violence in the city causes him. I mean, it came through from him. It came through from TJ, who was personally affected by it. I mean, Brandon talked about walking through chalk outlines to get to school, and you could just sense the anguish. What do we need to do? And it's not going to be fixed overnight. I mean, it's not going to be like Mayor Scott walks in there one day and tomorrow we go from 300 homicides to 150 overnight. But what, give us hope, because we believe so much in this city. Give folks listening hope that we can actually begin to make a dent in this violence that's plaguing so many young people in Baltimore City.
I believe that we will. I believe that it starts with us. It's not one person who's going to save our city. It's going to be all of us. What I do want to highlight, and what we're always talking about the violence, and it's top of mind for all of us. But I want to highlight the good work that's going on with Safe Streets Baltimore. Even Safe Streets Baltimore right down there, right outside of my district, but I support them because I know when any portion of the city wins, we all win. So Safe Streets Baltimore, Bel Air, Addison, seeing the work that they're doing with the young men and young women on our corner, I know that they're making a difference. When I think about ROCA and I think about Violence Interrupters, I know that a difference is being made. Just lifting up Erica Bridgeford and her team at and I'm sorry, I'm just having
well, you're gonna get Moeller talking about threat too. So we're gonna name them all.
there,
but there, I mean, the thing we've noted
are doing some great work. And as long as we are looking at this as well from, this is a, it's a public health crisis to me. Crime is a public health crisis to me. It's not going to be solved overnight, but I do think that we can work a little bit faster. We've had plans, we've had data. I think at this point we know what to do. And I feel that with our new mayor, with our new city council, as a whole, working together, that we can solve many of these issues. And it may not happen tomorrow, but we're going to put a decent dent in this. And I think it's going to be much sooner than later.
For me in the city, and I didn't attend city schools. I attended Baltimore County. I was at Dundalk High when Don Mohler was. That's why it turned out so well, Danielle. You know, so you talk about going to Poly and being a product of city schools. We sit with Brandon, a product of city schools. And the city schools get bagged on, obviously, all public education does. Look at who's been running it the last 4 years. And thankfully, we're at the end of that nightmare with the DeVos crew. But in improving city schools, you experienced it. You experienced it more recently than, let's say, I have. Some thoughts about where the city schools are, and especially in your own district, and things that are necessary, mandatory, as we get through this period of time, was to you say, there's a digital divide that begins with kids at home now. But at some point, we're going to be putting these kids back on buses, walking, back to schools, back to classrooms at some point. How can we make that experience better for the next generation, knowing what you know?
I'm thinking that for me, it's going to have to be through legislation. It's going to have to be through working with all levels of government. Right now, I have 9 schools within my district, but my schools are elementary and middle schools. And I know how important early childhood development, early childhood education is, and that's where my focus is going to be. The sooner we touch our kids and make sure that they have proper modeling, they're going to be fine, but we have to get our kids as young as possible. Supporting our kids for when they do get back in. Right now, we are living through history with this pandemic. That's the way I see it. We're living through history, making sure that kids aren't just going to, say, a 21st century school just by the time they get to high school. Making sure that there are 21st century schools, working with the state to make as many happen across the city, as well as just making sure and pushing our colleagues on a state level to make sure that Kerwin is passed and our schools are funded equitably. Like, that's important, and that's where it's going to come through. And I'm from, you know, we talked about my family earlier, but I had a whole community behind me. We all just have to grasp onto our children and support them. All of our children through this time and when they go back to school. But it's I keep saying it's a hands-on deck approach. I feel like that's all issues across the city, especially with our youth.
Danielle, one of the issues that comes up all of the time when you talk to city folks, and again, I think it's a national issue, it's the whole affordable housing issue and quality housing for people in the city. Give us your perspective from the second district and citywide as to where we are in providing folks with quality homes to live, places to live, and what we need to be doing.
I think we're moving in the right direction. The Affordable Housing Trust, John Bullock worked very hard to make sure that it was funded. We have organizations like NEHA who are starting community land trusts. They just opened one of their offices on Bel Air Road, I want to say maybe about 8 to 10 months ago. We have St. Ambrose, who we work with, who are consistently providing affordable housing in all avenues around the city. So I would just say that we continue to support the organizations that we have, make sure that there's funding for first-time homeowners, especially homeowners who are renting here, but they want to stay in the city. Everyone doesn't want to leave, but we just need to make sure that those opportunities are available, that there's funding available to keep residents here who actually work here and want to stay here.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a great visit with you. You know, we've visited with other family members. You said the magic word to Mueller. I thought you set Mueller up. When you said Kerwin, he went, yeah, the light went on because, you know, we've talked so much about that. That is something I think municipality, you know, the greater good for everyone here would be benefited by everyone being better at. We talk about schools, but then, you know, when it comes time to vote, our conscience is the budget, right? Literally.
It is. It's always going to be surrounded. It's always going to be around the budget. But that's what we're in place to do, to come up with ideas, to make sure that we are being fiscally responsible about what we're doing, that we have knowledgeable legislators, that when we're pushing stuff through, that we know how much it's going to cost, we know where this money is going to come from, and find an innovative ways to fund what we need. I'm optimistic about our city. I'm optimistic about our new city council who have came, and my colleagues are ready to go from day one. I'm supportive of, let's just say, we are not just ready to work, we are working now.
Well, there is an energy that is infectious, and it is sort of the essence of Baltimore Positive in terms of believing in the city, knowing that good days are ahead. And Nestor and I are singing this. Once we can get back out and around again, one of our mantras has been to folks throughout the region to get down to Baltimore City. We live in the Anne Arundel County, Baltimore County, Harford County, you name it. Get back down to Baltimore City, because as the city goes, we all go. Don't just come in for the peach cake.
Not just for the peach cake. Stay a little while longer.
Danielle, it's a hard, hard job. It takes many, many hours a week. What do you do to relax and kick back and say, man, I need to take a few minutes for Danielle? What do you like to do when you have some leisure time?
You know what? I love to read. It's prayer. I've learned to meditate too. I'm working out again because I put on 20 COVID pounds and they need to come off. So I'm exercising, I'm reading, I'm meditating, I am praying, and I'm staying positive.
Well, there you go, man. We got that Britain into this, so we appreciate that. She is from Council 2, and I tell you what, I'm going to get up there for more than the peach cake up in the northeast segment of the city. We'll honk the horn when we get up there near Rosedale and out of Highland Town, up 40 and 895. She is Danielle McCray. You can find her out there. She's got a Twitter page, and as do all the – Don, we got 14. We got to get them all on, right? I mean, we've moved around the city a little bit. Before the springtime, we're going to get everybody on from the
– We're working. We're working our way through, but we had one of
Tell
the
real, Zeke we're looking for him. Tell him we're looking for him.
One of the real up-and-comers on today and one of the real bright lights in Baltimore City elected politics.
I appreciate you guys so much. Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it. There she is, Danielle McCray, joining us here. Councilwoman from my city, Baltimore, our city. I got the swag on right now. Courtesy of our friends. What's that? Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we're trying. We're stepping up our game here in 2021, trying to get rid of 2020, talking some football around here as well as some local politics, some local business, and reminding everyone, shop local. Make sure you're clicking on the Taharka logo on our website. Or just go out to the Taharka website, find them on Facebook. Now employee-owned, big story this week at Taharka. They're shipping it $15.70 off the 8-pack as featured here with the big pink bus. Although it's not the pink bus that delivers these, it's a different delivery mechanism. Click on it, pick your flavors. There's 28 flavors to pick from. Pick the 8 that you love, take your $15.70 off, and get it delivered next week. You'll be having eggnog ice cream for the holidays, as it should be. On behalf of former Baltimore County Executive Don Mueller, I am Nestor Aparicio. We together do this thing we call BaltimorePositive.com.